Okay. I want to thank everybody who's on the call right now. And I also want to thank everybody who's listening to the recording for listening to the shiur. The topic chosen, I believe it was chosen by Women Torah Educators, is women in hair covering. There's a tremendous amount of material written about this, and I'm certainly not capable of reviewing all the contemporary literature on this matter. I guess I would have hoped that we could have a question and answer session, because if people want to hear a shiur about it, despite all the material available, it must be that there's either some questions or perhaps pressing questions even, or something else related to the matter which requires some elucidation. And I'm a bit concerned that I'm only going to repeat what everybody knows, but I'm going to present my understanding of the sugya, and I hope it will be appreciated. I will leave time for questions at the end, if there are any. The requirement for women to cover their hair is based on three different principles, which are undoubtedly related to each other, but I think that they are nonetheless distinct, because although some of them are brought together, it falls out on different people in different ways. The first halacha is a Gemara Maseches Brachos on Daf Chof Dalet, where the Gemara says, "Seyar b'isha erva." The hair of a woman is erva. The word erva in context means a revealed part of the woman's body. When it being exposed, a person may not say, a male, may not say Kriyat Shema and Shmona Esrei and Brachot. He would have to turn around, or close his eyes, or put some blockage up between himself and this sight in order to say these Divrei Kedusha. This is the context of that Gemara. There is a discussion in the Rishonim about other matters mentioned over there, in particular called the Isha, as to whether it's intrinsically forbidden for a woman to put her erva on display, or whether this is just a particular problem at the time of saying Kriyat Shema and other holy matters, and that it's not an issue otherwise. But the widely accepted opinion, the halacha, is that if it's considered to be so distracting that one's forbidden from saying Divrei Kedusha at the time when the ervaz is revealed, then it certainly should not be revealed. And therefore the assumption is that whatever is erva should be covered. That's one halacha. The second halacha is a statement of Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel found in Masechet Ketubot Daf Ayin Beis Amud Aleph that says that based on a pasuk in Parashat Sota, that apparently B'not Yisrael, by and large, cover their hair. And therefore, it's assumed to be a din min ha-Torah that women are expected to cover their hair. The Gemara then asks, why is it suggested then that it's not necessarily min ha-Torah, but it's only a dat yudit, it's a proper Jewish custom, and the answer given is the extent of the coverage, that apparently a minimal coverage is sufficient for the din Torah, but a more extensive covering of the hair is expected for based on the custom of the time, based on dat yehudit. The differences between these coverings is not absolutely clear, certainly to me today. First of all, there's a word used in the Talmud in which there's a machloket between Rashi and the Rambam, what it means, and even besides that machloket, the ornamental covering of the hair that women had at the time of the Talmud is not known, at least to me. What's the difference between a kalta and a redid and other terminologies used in the Talmud and the Rishonim, so that in effect, you know, what we know today is that either the hair is covered or it's not, and it all comes down to the same thing. So this is the second halakha. This halakha implies a regularity of tzniut rather than a confrontation, so to speak, of ervat ha'isha with the male. And the third halakha is that a woman who does reveal her hair inappropriately does not have the right to collect her ketubah if her husband divorces her. That is certainly a function of the previous halakha, but nevertheless, it's most explicitly regarding a woman who was married and now being divorced, she loses her rights to ketubah because it's understood that she has been involved in inappropriate behavior, and this is a form of inappropriate behavior. Okay, now I'm going to try to discuss at least the first two and possibly the third of these halachot in greater detail. First of all, the halacha of sar b'isha, sear b'isha erva, Gemara Brachot Daf Chof Dalet. As opposed to many of the other things in the Gemara there, which is called erva, there seems to be an assumption that that sarot have loopholes. I don't know how else to put it. In other words, a woman is expected to cover, seyar b'isha erva, but nevertheless, it's understood that in places where women, by and large, do not cover their hair, which, as we'll soon find out, the most important to them is within the home, then the seyar is not erva. So the a woman's husband is certainly allowed to say brachot and kriyat shema when his wife is walking around the house with her hair uncovered. A woman's children are similarly allowed to say kriyat shema and brachot under those circumstances without a shadow of a doubt. So what we're seeing over here is that somehow or other, Se'ar Isha, although it's by and large assumed to be a covered portion of the body, when it's not expected to be covered, is not treated like Erva. And this leads us to think that there seems to be something subjective about this halakha and not absolutely objective. That's halakha number one in terms of an exception to the rule in the house. The second exception to the rule is that there are places in the Talmud where it's implied that the fulfillment of this issue can be done without covering every last hair on the woman's head. In other words, some of the hair is going to be revealed. It doesn't say in the Talmud explicitly how much, but some of it is clearly revealed. So once again, we see that the issue is what's considered to be normative, rather than absolute. In other words, I am assuming, and I believe that what I'm assuming is correct, is that there are other parts of the woman's body that even if it becomes taken for granted that women could appear publicly with those parts uncovered, that's considered to be society's problem. It's not considered to be our problem. You know, we would not, follow society on this matter. Well, what we're talking about here about is that since it was understood that not every last hair is covered, those hairs that are by and large not covered are not considered to be problematic. Ad kan, the two exceptions to the rule, that is in the house and a small amount of hair, is based on the Talmudic sources. There's also a source in the Rishonim that has a very important exception. It's also based on the Talmud, actually, and that is that a betula does not cover her hair. Now, this is not explicit in the Talmud, but in this halacha at least it's not explicit. And the implication of the tour is that all women are expected to be covering their hair, even non-married women, and the Shulchan Aruch says that as well. Despite that, we have a source, Rav Yoh quoted by the Mordechai, that betulot don't cover their hair, and their hair is not erva. And the Darkei Moshe on the tour, by the way, this tour is in Siman, Chazal of Eben Ha'ezer, and the Shulchan Aruch also right there. The Darkei Moshe right there says that the betulot don't have to, and he says that that's what the tour really means. He means when the tour says that even unmarried women have to, it means unmarried women who are not betulot. Please understand that the simple assumption of the Gemara and the tour and the Shulchan Aruch is that a woman who is not a betula means a woman who has been married and no longer is, either she's an almana or a grusha. Getting into the details of what happens if a woman is not a betula, out of wedlock, it just doesn't come up in the poskim, as far as I saw. In any case, Rama says that that's what the tour means. He never meant to imply that a betula has to cover her hair. And the achronim on the daf in Shulchan Aruch and the Chalkas v'Chokek and the Beit Shmuel both say that the Shulchan Aruch, even though he also says that pnuyot have to cover their hair, he also means pnuyot who have been married, not a betula. So, and this, as we know, is the minhag of all Am Yisrael today, that betulot don't cover their hair. Now, this raises a question. How would anyone know if you don't know a woman and she's walking around with her hair uncovered? It means that if she's married, she's the hair is erva. And if she's single, if she's a betula, then her hair is not erva. Well, how is anyone supposed to know the difference? I mean, it could be two twin girls, identical twins. One is married and the other is not. One of their hair is going to be erva and the other hair is not going to be erva. In other words, there's no following this, even though whether a girl is a betula is, of course, an objective criteria, but there's no objective criteria regarding the hair itself. In other words, we're not saying that beneath a certain age it's not erva, beyond a certain age it is erva. Nor is the implication of the Rav Yah that there's a heter for betulot not to cover their hair because it's important for them to be able to attract men to marry them. That's not what the Rav Yah says. Rav Yah says that because women who are betulot regularly don't cover their hair, we've gotten used to it, and therefore it's not ma'aleh hirhur. Now, one, of course, can question that. And, you know, it doesn't take much to the Lehalot Hirhur. But the notion that because it's not done, therefore it doesn't cause issues, and therefore it's not a problem, it basically implies that this halakha is subjective to situations and not objective. So these are the three exceptions to the rule. In the house, a small amount of hair, which apparently was not covered even in the time of the Talmud, and Betulah, all these three women, all of these three situations are situations in which women are not expected to cover their hair. And it brings us to the conclusion that this is a halakha which has loopholes. That's subjective to circumstances. Although the point seems to be, what are we used to, what are we not used to, nevertheless, that is considered subjective and not objective. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan in Aruch Chaim, Siman Ayin Hei, Sif Zayin, comes to a very drastic conclusion. And it doesn't fit into our preconceived notions about what was going on in Eastern European Jewry at the end of the 19th century. Our notion of everyone being Al-Tachlis HaKdusha and Ahidur and everything else, and in particular in Lithuania, where the Aruch HaShulchan lived, and in the city of Novardik, Amutzer City, Novgorod. Yeah, it's, you know, everyone must have been in our eyes, like, the Dor Kodom, Tzedikim, beyond any question. So he says very explicitly that in our Dor, Ba'avon Aseinu HaRavim, most women are not covering their hair. Most married women, he meant, are not covering their hair. And even though it's wrong and they should be covering their hair, nevertheless, since most of them are not, we have gotten used to it. And therefore, the whole halakha of Siyar B'Yisha Erva no longer applies and is permitted to say Kriyat Shema and Brachot in front of married women with their hair uncovered. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan is one of the major poskim of the Dor. He's considered a posek achron. There was talk in the previous generation of whether if there's machlokas, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Mishnah, who should one follow. You know, and there was certainly Gedolei Yisrael who preferred the Aruch HaShulchan. And it's a very powerful statement, but it was a very practical statement. And please understand that what is well known, that certain famous Gedolei Yisrael in the 20th century, their wives didn't cover their hair, is a direct reflection of what was going on in Lithuania in the 19th century already. It simply wasn't being done. And you can throw in a Ba'avon Aseinu HaRavim, but it wasn't being done. And no one, as far as I know, justified it. But the fact that it wasn't being done resulted in the halakha of Siyar B'Yisha Erva no longer being practical. That's in terms of it being forbidden. Forbidden to say Kriyat Shema or Brachot while the hair is revealed. Okay. Now, with the understanding that it is a problem, nonetheless, that we should try to avoid this, how much should not be revealed? So, Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Igrot Moshe, I believe in Sefer Avon HaEzer, Siman Nun Chet, takes for granted that the shiur of Tefach which is a shear for Erva and the rest of the body, should be applied over here as well. That's not necessarily obvious, but he did apply it. And therefore, up to a tefach affair is not a problem, assuming that one is being careful to do this properly. Okay. So much for the halakha, siyar v'isha erba. Now, we're going to go on to the next halakha of Mnot Yisrael Machasot Sarotayin, that Jewish women cover their hair. So we've already pointed out that it would appear to apply to all women, but that the Rav Yoh and the Mordechai and the Darkei Moshe and the Chalkat Mechokek and the Beit Shmuel all hold that it does not apply to a betula. Fine. Bezman hazeh, there is a new kula, which I see is universally held, and it would be frightening to be machmir against this in terms of what you're doing to certain women. Many women who are careful to cover their hair when they're married, when their marriage has ended under whatever circumstances, whether they have been widowed or divorced, they want to uncover their hair. And the reason they explain is they want to be known as people who are open to marriage in order that they could remarry. And if they're going to walk around with a hair covering, men will not notice that. It's not clear to me whether the idea is that covering your hair is like a siman that you're married and therefore they're concerned, whether they actually want to look more attractive and therefore to show their hair, which of course is exactly the point of the implicit prohibition. It's widely accepted that we allow these women to do that. Now the question is why? So there are a number of simple answers. One is the Aruch HaShulchan Skula that we mentioned before is always breathing down this halacha, that we have to be careful not to treat the hair as erva, given that it's not. Second of all, the distinction between betula and not betula is not obvious in the Talmud regarding this halacha. Let's put it that way, and therefore the heter that was taken for granted regarding the tulot should be allowed to other women as well who are interested in getting married. And frankly, the whole issue of betulim seems to have become less of a concern in our generation. I don't know how else to put it. The readiness in the earlier dorot of a man to marry a woman who was not a betula was quite compromised, let's put it that way. In our own generation, it's my impression that given that a woman is a bastar in Yirei Shemayim, and even for some reason, at some point in her past history, she had not been, these things are much more easily forgiven today than they have been in the past. So that the whole distinction of betula and not betula is societally just not true. And I suspect that that's also a consideration in the widespread heter of allowing women who had been married and no longer are to go with their hair uncovered. And this is certainly done, and I've also permitted women to do it. And it would be an ava, I think, to forbid it. Okay. Now, regarding how much of the hair should be covered by the Bnot Yisrael who are expected to cover their hair. So I will mention two widely known shitot, and then I will mention the third shita that is like the flare of the day, and I'll talk about it in a minute. As I mentioned before, the Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Igrot Moshe takes for granted that the shear of women covering their hair should be what women regularly leave uncovered. And since Tefach B'Sharva, we know that there is a certain amount that they do leave uncovered, that's clear in the Gemara. And since the shear, only shear of Erva we have is a Tefach, he assumes that the shear is Tefach, and therefore Rav Moshe holds that up to a tefach of hair may be shown by a woman, even though she's covering her hair. So this means that if a woman has extremely long hair, the only thing she's allowed to show is a tefach at the end. If a woman has extremely short hair, then she can also show a tefach. And that is the shear of how much hair can show for a woman who is required to cover her hair. There is an opinion which I have not found in writing, although I suppose someone must have written it down, but that basically runs along the following lines. Given that Bezman HaZeh, the Aruch HaShulchan said that Sar B'Sharva is no longer practical, even though women are expected to cover their hair, given that they're married, there should be a hair covering, but that doesn't take into consideration the shear of erva, which is a tefach. So what would then be considered a proper hair covering? So a simple assumption would be if the majority of the hair is covered, then the hair is covered. So following this approach, if a woman has a little bit of hair, she just covers the majority of that little bit, and that's enough. If a woman has a tremendous amount of hair, very long hair, if she's covering the majority of that hair, then that's enough also. And then, say, if a woman has extremely long hair, I won't say down to where. So as long as the majority of that hair is covered underneath some sort of the covering, the fact that the rest of it is showing is permitted. And this is... Yeah, I'm sure you've seen many women, and I believe this goes on amongst the Torah educators as well, where women who are showing a significant amount of hair, I assume under the assumption that that the majority is being covered. There is a third opinion that Vanyut Dati is a Dat Yachid at best, and it goes like this. Let me explain first that, women have been covering their hair. Admittedly, the women have, many from women stop covering their hair, but the women who do cover their hair, we know how they cover it. And they cover close to all their hair. They show a little bit, but they cover close to all their hair. And this is how women cover their hair. In the past 10 years or so, women have started covering their hair like a little bit, and for some reason they think that's enough. And it's almost as if the small amount of covering is like a wedding ring or something like that. Like no one would ever say that a ring is meant to cover the finger, right? It's just meant to signify that the woman is married. So just like they put a ring on their finger, they put some sort of something or other on their hair, and it's meant to signify that the woman is married. And these coverings usually cover very little of the air. So I assumed that it was just a mistake, and mistakes do sometimes catch by wildfire. But I learned this sugya with Natali Rothstein, a former Torah educator from Illinois, I think last summer. And he investigated the matter, and he found that this way of covering the air is attributed to Rav Nachum Rabinovich, the Rosh Hashiva of Yeshivat Ma'ale Adumim, the Kat Moshe. And Rav Nachum Rabinovich is, he called him up. I didn't speak to Rav Nachum, and he called him up, though, and asked him if he really held that way. And Rav Nachum Rabinovich explained the following. He said that the halacha of covering, of women covering her head, is only the head. It has nothing to do with the hair. And since it's the head and has nothing to do with the hair, as long as the majority of the head is covered, the fact that there's a tremendous amount of hair coming out is not a problem. This is how Naftali explained to me, Rav Nachum Rabinovich explained it to him. Now, it's true that the word Rosh is used in the Gemara, but I think it's absolutely strange to completely divorce the Minag Yisrael of how to cover your hair, if you do, from the text, and say that, you know, because it says Rosh and it doesn't say Se'ah, you just have to cover the head, you don't have to cover the hair. He's also completely divorcing this halacha from the din of Sar Bishayar Vaz, if they have absolutely nothing to do with each other. And it's also not mashman in the Gemara, because the Gemara derives the obligation for a woman to cover her hair from Upara Rosh Aisha of by Sota, which certainly means that you unravel her hair. So the Rosh there is referring to the hair. It's not referring to the skull. And it can't be denied that Rav Nachum Rabinovich, who I'm not in his league by any means, I'm not a bar plukta of his, you know, it's not for me to disagree, except that this is a completely unheard of idea outside of his suggestion. Of course, it's caught like wildfire amongst the Tilumi in Eretz Yisrael, and I think it's beginning to show up in Chutz Laretz also. My assumption is that all the other Gedolei Yisrael and Poskim are against this, since I've never heard anyone else say it's okay. And it shouldn't be followed, the Shimpanim Ba'ofen. It's like not covering your hair. I can't say that those who do this don't have anhum to be somech. Rav Nachum Rabinovich apparently said it, but to say that it's so out of context of how the Jewish people have done it, and also the simple mashmos of the Gemara, that I think this whole approach should be avoided. But if a woman does it, she's following this approach of Rav Nachum Rabinovich. Okay. Now, next common issue. Where is a woman expected to cover her hair? So it's clear in the Gemara and Ksuvos and Daf Ayin Beis that in the woman's home, she's not expected to cover her hair. And that in the Rishus HaRabim, she is expected to cover her hair. In the Chatzer, there seems to be some sort of questioning of the situation. And there are different approaches in the Gemara. And in the commentaries on the Gemara, and possibly between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, what comes out is that the simple meaning of the Talmud Bavli is that in the Chatzer, we have to define Chatzer, I know, but in the Chatzer, women doesn't have to cover her hair, only in Rishus HaRabim. and that going from one chaser to another chaser within the Mavoi, a woman should put on something more significant than when she's only in the chaser. But there are poskim who insist that even in the chaser, a woman should be wearing something. And there are ways of being medayked that's in the Rambam also. What does it come down to? Today we don't really have, you know, the Talmudic chatzer, you know, without going into a description of what cities looked like or neighborhoods looked like at the time of the Talmud. So for our purposes, there's the house and there's Rishus HaRabim. That's all there really is. And the Rishus HaRabim, a woman does have to cover here. In the house, she doesn't have to cover here. Now, the thing is that what happens if there are other people who from the Rishus HaRabim who have invaded your house, so to speak, or you invited them in, they weren't invaded. What does that do to the house? So the Yerushalmi actually talks about a chatzer, which is like a mavui, and a mavui, which is like a chatzer. The implication of the Yerushalmi is that if there are too many people in the chaser, it should be treated as if it's a more public place. And if there's almost nobody in the mavui, it should be treated like a more private place. Now, it's not necessarily the case that that what the Yerushalmi says about chaser and mavui can be easily applied to bias and Rishus HaRabim. But I can tell you personally, when I asked Rav Soloveitchik how my wife should cover her hair when we were still engaged, I went together with my wife-to-be, Rav Soloveitchik, and he didn't want to answer. He said I should decide myself. I had no interest in deciding myself. I didn't understand how I was going to come to my own decision on this matter, and I spoke to Rav Shachber and Rav Baron Khan at the time, and they both suggested that when the wife is alone at home, there's no reason for her to cover her hair. But when other people come in, they should. That's clearly based on this Yerushalmi, that when there are people around, then the bias is no longer a private area. I'll just say that, you know, this is what we do, this is what we do at home, and I know many other people who do this as well, that whenever they have a guest, the woman puts on the hair covering. But the simple reading of the Gemara would not have implied that. The simple reading would be, as long as there are only a few people in the house, it doesn't become a Rishus HaRabim. It has to be like you invited over the whole town to your house. That would turn it into a Rishus HaRabim, assuming the house could ever become a Rishus HaRabim. In any case, this is what we followed. And there's certainly room to imagine that unless you invited a tremendous number of people over, like you made a kiddush in your house or something, that a woman wouldn't have to cover her hair in her house. Okay. That's in terms of place. Now, the sheitel. I feel very wary about talking about this, but I don't see how it can be left out. The sheitel, meaning pe'ah nachrit, wearing hair of a non-Jewish woman, I suppose, someone else's hair, instead of your own, that's a way of covering your hair, was a terrible machloket in the 19th century, when I guess it must have become very common. And we're living in the aftermath of that terrible machloket. In Yerushalayim, there was they wouldn't talk to Rebitzel Mipetterburg when he came to Anahan Aliyah because his wife wore a sheitel. You know, Rebitzel Mipetterburg was one of the great Bali Musar, a Talmud Muvukas, Rebitzel Solanta, and his wife wore a sheitel, and it was like a scandal. That his wife wore a sheitel, and it was completely unacceptable each time. In any case, it's over, and all the Gedol Yisrael's wives wear sheitlach. And there are pictures of Rav Kook's wife that she also wore a sheitel. And it has apparently been permitted And Chabad Chassidim, of course, are very careful to wear sheitels. So the sheitlach won, so to speak, and that seems to be the accepted pshat. That being said, it's hard to avoid the obvious, which is that wearing a sheitel is very much a fulfillment of the letter of the law without a fulfillment of the spirit of the law. I don't know how else to put it. It could be that in the sheitlach of ancient days, which really did not look anything like regular women's hair, it wasn't that way, and that it was an appropriate way of covering one's hair, except for the question of whether, since it's human hair, maybe it shouldn't be done. So that's something that had to be dealt with. But today, where women get sheitlach, that I guess women can always tell what's the sheitel. Men often can't tell, and especially when, you know, you can't help but feel that the whole point of the sheitel is to beautify the woman, and the whole point of the hair covering was to keep the beauty of the woman something private for her husband, and it makes no sense. It's more than ironic. It's one of those things that it just doesn't jive, and it's not for me to forbid what has been permitted by all the Gedolei Yisrael. So I'll just leave it at that. But I certainly don't understand it, and I don't mean to imply that anyone should change what they're doing. But I don't understand it, and I'll leave it at that. Okay. I'll just mention as the last point that it's widely accepted amongst the poskim that b'zman hazeh, since so many people are not makbid on hair covering, a woman does not lose her ksuba if she doesn't cover her hair publicly. It could be that there are certain Hasidic communities where that's not assumed to be the case, but as long as the women do collect their tzuba, even if they don't cover their hair. That's as much as I have to say about this topic. If anyone would like to ask any questions, I will try to answer.